This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time. Sponsor missions. Giro Sport, people. That's right. The OGs of modern helmet design, leading the way in helmet, shoes, and accessories to make you go fast, stay safe, and ride in style and comfort. Use that link at packfiller.com today. Reynolds Wheels, everybody. Solid, fast, gorgeous, and one of the best warranty programs out there. We believe in these wheels, and you should too. Head over to mojocyclery.com, our local dealer here, or do the right thing and visit them in the Spokane Valley at 1405 North Argonne. Huel stands for human fuel, and that it is. Among their amazing selection of real fuel, I'm currently still enjoying the Black Edition Shake. I actually purchased more myself, paying money. It is not, they are not giving me free shit. I paid for it. It's super convenient, super tasty. I have chocolate, and now I'm going to try the vanilla. Add a little fresh fruit in there. It tastes great. Gets you going in the morning. It's my go-to morning fuel. It equates to about $2.50 a meal. They also have hot meals, too. I'm not going to lie. I had the curry today for lunch because I was too lazy to make myself a lunch today.
I wish I would have packed some of those this weekend.
Yo, I think it's going to be a great bike packing fuel option.
And for people that don't eat meat.
That's true. Yeah.
It is. That was a problem.
Oh, we'll get to that. Be sure to get to Pack Filler and use the link today and not only support the show, but great, great tasting, affordable meals. Trust me, Huel.com/ Pack Filler. There we go. Sponsor's done. Is that loud? It's a little hot. Oh, that was good.
Thank you.
It's a little loud, but you know what? When I listen back to the show, sometimes the theme is really quiet.
It's hotter in their ears right now.
Is it?
Yeah, this seems pretty hot.
It is a little loud.
This is you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's because I did a show with the Cycling Legends guys, and it was all a little quiet there. So. Yeah, I finally did a show with them.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Except two of the four files were corrupt, so it's not going to get posted. It's like I don't exist. I swear I'm on that show, but I don't exist. 3 weeks to the Tour de France, everybody. I'm not sure that makes me excited or sad. You see, because when the tour is over, I always get depressed, like the summer is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. Am I the only one?
But it is coming to an end.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's still July. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I always just like watching the final credits, and they do that kind of that huge roll of all the, you know, recap
montage.
And the whole time montage.
Yeah.
And I just get bummed. Huh. On that happy note, welcome to Life on Two Wheels. Welcome to the Pack Filler Cycling Podcast. I'm Pat Bulger, and we are, as usual, live in the Rim Break Bar. And if you haven't yet, you can find us on YouTube every Tuesday and on our website. Mm-hmm. That's packfiller.com in case you were wondering. Let's see who's here if you aren't watching live. Panel of peddlers, answer me this. When people come to you for help, what kind of help are they usually looking for? Hey, insert your name here. I need some advice on blank. What is it they usually come to you and ask for you for? Sam's already laughing. Mm-hmm. First of all, he's the guy crazy enough to ride 80 plus miles alone, Mr. Paul Main. How are you, ma'am?
Doing all right.
Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did this weekend. He did the, RC3
Says
course.
You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a fringe.
Oh, I'm getting yeah. People you pay.
You rode 30 miles further than I did.
Yeah, that's true.
Paul, how are you?
Good, good.
Yeah. How was the 80 plus miler?
It was good. It was a good solo ride. You know, I had thoughts run through my head, and you know, about mile 60, all of a sudden,
and
it's
I
like,
took a pill, and they all went away.
Yeah, well, that's about what happened. Yeah. Mile 60 was just like, it's always going through my head.
No music.
No.
Do you take music?
Yeah, I do. I take music when I solo ride.
I do
only.
Too. Yeah, that's the only time I do.
Yep.
If somebody asks you for advice, what is it?
Type of toilet paper.
Huh.
Because all my conversations start with, I have poo stories left and right. I don't like German toilet paper. When I go over to Germany, it's like, you know those toilet hats? Those toilet hats? You know, with that crinkly...
Toilet
like,
hats?
You know, the gaskets that you...
Oh,
you,
yeah, you put on
that's
there.
That's like their toilet paper.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Europeans are like...
It's
dude,
bidet.
Yeah.
Yeah, bidets are the way to go. Don't get me started on bidets.
I've been in a bidet in Germany.
Oh, really?
No, not in the hotels or...
Two bathrooms in this house, both have bidets.
Yeah. One bathroom in my house has a bidet.
Yep.
It's good.
It's a good call.
Yeah. It is, especially since the whole COVID, where everybody's like going, "World's coming to an end, we need toilet paper."
Yep.
It's like fucking why? Anyway, they ask you for toilet paper.
Yeah, you know, usually when I'm pretty in depth about my poos.
This happens. This happens regularly.
No, people don't ask regularly any advice from me. They took a look and hey, you no
oh.
like directions. No, this guy doesn't know where he's going. I never get that. I mean, it's like the only thing people ask is like, you know, you talk about poo a lot. But what's your favorite? And I go for the big mega rule, because I have my old Clonago fork that I turned into a toilet paper dispenser.
That's
and it's on
cool.
a quick release, and I was thinking, boy, I'm think there's a couple of times I had to make a quick change. Had I had a through axle, I would have been screwed.
A
quick
this
release.
Is
I was
unreal.
I was gonna time it, see how fast it would take me to switch a roll of toilet.
NASCAR
so
pit crew. He's swapping
pretty
out
cool,
for a quick
yeah,
wipe.
I'll take a picture sometime.
You're
not of me wiping, but of my toilet paper.
You're not gonna just tear and go. It has to be on the holder in order for you to prepare yourself.
Yeah,
at the
end of it. I mean, that's. I want.
It's got to be
there.
Proper.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to stand up and reach over. No, we got smushing going on. That's
question.
Like,
question.
Whoa.
Do you stand and wipe or sit and wipe?
If
whoa. Sit,
stand.
No, never stand.
No, I sit.
What?
I lean.
You stand?
I worry about you, Sam.
No, guys,
you're a stand and wiper.
There's multiple of us out there.
Well, you are messed up human beings. You've
got
a dirty butt right
whoa.
Now in a bar
stool.
You've got to have a dirty butt.
Yeah, the cheeks.
Wow.
Come back together.
Here we've been.
How are you standing up?
Well, we've been so complimented. It's his ass
like,
size. It's because his ass is so huge.
He doesn't probably have a butthole. He has a slit.
Oh my good God!
Guy's how
been,
far apart?
Guy's
of
been
this,
like this long.
He's been shitting pancakes for all these years.
I know. It's like, well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, turds are little. Now we're good.
Yeah, we have gone off the rails.
When you stand up, that's just like taking a hamburger patty. You're making a hamburger.
Oh
patty.
My God, no.
That's what you're doing.
Way.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't make sense.
I agree with what he's saying. Standing
who
up is
taught you
weird.
That? That's wrong.
I
see your dad every once in a while. I'm going to talk to
plus
him.
Plus, you've got
that.
You've
wrong.
Got the added elevation
God, I
change.
I should ask my dad this question. Actually,
yeah.
you've got the added
out.
Elevation.
You could die right there.
I just mean there's droppage potential there. You know, you don't want.
Do you turn around?
What God
do we do?
No.
So what do you?
Like face the toilet and wipe my butt over the like.
What's the
you know,
advantage
floor?
Of that? Yeah. I don't get it. You're already
yeah,
sitting.
Got a rubber hose.
If I'm sitting on the toilet, I'm like this already. How are you gonna roll over to like wipe
it's
in that position?
It's not as complicated. You scooch forward half an inch.
I lean off to one side.
Go into the back.
He's not very limber.
I lean.
How
off.
Do you guys get your?
God, I'm gonna try this.
I just tilt off.
32
to the
years
side,
old,
man.
And he's like, wow.
I know many people that do this.
So many wasted years.
I'm trying to take a poll here.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. listeners chime in on whether
I
or
wanted
not
to, you stand
you're
or
a lunatic and you stand up to wipe your butt.
Yep.
Second off, God, that, wow. He's the guy crazy enough to ride 200 miles in a weekend. Am I correct in that
230.
Distance? 230. 230. Wow. You're a lunatic, Mr. Sam Waples.
Yeah.
And he wipes standing up. How are you, man?
That's bad.
I am good. Please. I am recovering. I sound kind of nasally.
You sound a little, yeah.
That's very much allergies. That. Like, I am allergic to everything under the sun. And when we got on long bike rides, usually I pay for it. But, like, I didn't take that into account. I probably should have, like, pre-medicated or taken, like, Flonase on this.
Wow.
Because, like,
do
being
sound
on gravel.
Nasally.
Oh, yeah. Being on gravel roads and stuff. And then all the flowers out in the fields. It's crazy. Yeah. So I was just like, I got home and I was like, wow, I can, like, barely breathe. And then yesterday got better and today's even better than that.
Wow.
But, yeah. It was brutal.
We're gonna get to the ride. I do want to talk at length a bit. But what do people ask you for advice? What made you smile? That wry, knowing smile
is that, like, I'm thinking back on my wife saying the other day, because she, I don't know, signed me up for something, and she's like, "Well, you gotta stop being so good at so many things." And I'm like,
"Oh my god,
no, that sounds cocky. Hear me out."
No, it sounds like your marriage is all sunshine, rainbows.
Well, it
and
is
freaking unicorns.
Have you met my wife? She's an angel. Except for that she signs me up for things all the time and I never have free time.
Okay.
Because she's like, oh yeah, go. I cut, you know, her grandpa's hair. And
really?
I, you know, yeah, do like various different, I did drywall stuff for my sister, do electrical stuff for her sometimes. It's like, I mean, just all these like random
things. To say no, man. It's okay to say no.
I feel useless.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, I mean, I want to help.
So
right?
What's the one, the
predominant most important
thing?
Is being in my profession. Like, yeah. You never mention that you're, you know, PT when you're at a party.
Oh, yeah.
I have this thing from back in the day, and it's usually like a Paul Main story where it's like, I got this big boil on my butt.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
It?
It's not usually, but yeah, it's like, it's usually things like that. How can you help with this?
I got a sore shoulder. Well, try standing up to wipe.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
You that don't have to help. Reach over the green ramp.
Yeah.
This is going to be the thing all night, and I love
it. It's
going to
be a poopy
it.
Show. Yeah. It's going to be a poopy show. Third, he's the guy crazy enough to, well, not crazy enough, unlucky enough to keep breaking his freaking equipment, Mr. Jackson Bulger.
Now what?
No,
well,
it's
wait,
just
the same as it was before.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's all the same.
Oh, my God. I'm like, I can't handle anymore.
Yeah. No. We're not changing anything this time. Okay. Let's see. Oh, I'm fine.
Good.
Yeah. I have one more day left of the school year. Ooh. So that's good. One full day left. So
I have three.
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. Oh, well.
That's exciting.
It is.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three best things about being a teacher? June, July, and August.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That is fun.
The thing that people ask me advice for, I guess it just depends on how much I share. if I say that I like to ride my bike, people ask about, like, what bike shop do I go to? If I tell them that I'm not the biggest drinker, but I might have fun other places.
You like occasional confectionery treats.
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
People ask advice there.
Wow. Yummy.
Yeah.
No, gummy. Goomy.
Yeah. People will ask advice there. I just like, yeah, like I said, it just depends on how much I share.
Yeah.
Ask advice about video game stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I know a lot about electronics.
Across the board, except for Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one asks
specifically
me
poop.
No
Poopy
one.
Paul.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. No one asks anything.
Really?
That's
not electrical?
For electrical.
Yeah, they as soon as they start talking, they're just like, you know what? I got a friend that does that.
Really?
Oh. They walk away.
Yeah.
Me, I'm the guy crazy enough to build a podcast studio. I'm Pat Bulger, and if people are looking for help from me, it is always something to do with audio. It is all that kind of stuff because of this stuff comes up because of, you know, hey, how do you know, where do you plug this in and what does this do and why is this broken and can you fix my home stereo? And I, you know, I get people who've asked me, not anymore because I don't talk to anybody. They ask me like to help install their home stereo and stuff like that and run speaker wire and stuff like that. And I know that electrically I'm okay running speaker wire because it does.
Low voltage.
There's not going to be any code issues, so I can run electrical, that kind of stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of that kind of stuff. And yeah, I don't get a lot of cycling questions anymore. That's surprising. Get, where should I buy a bike? Where should I buy a bike?
That's what I get, yeah.
And I say anywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come wherever on. You can buy a bike.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like anything's worse. So let's get straight to it. Talk to me about your ride week. Jackson, we will go first. We got out, and is it just me, or was a dirt road ride just kind of different and refreshing? Notice I said dirt road and not the G word.
Yeah, it was what I needed for sure. It's the first ride that I'd done in 2 weeks. Yeah, and that was the only thing I did. But it was really good. Just not racing, just out there riding to see if I can still actually ride. And I was happily surprised with how little I'd lost.
So, yeah. That was my last ride. I haven't ridden since.
Me too.
Which just kind of sucked. I wanted to ride on Monday, but I did an interview yesterday, and then here we are.
Yeah, I'm hoping to ride tomorrow, and then obviously Thursday. But
okay. I'm having an angiogram tomorrow, which is they inject dye into me.
Yep,
which is a bad word.
Go to the
when you're on a table.
D-Y-E. Go to the take some garbage out there. That's great. They flag you down. Nukes. They will.
What are you talking about?
Because the dye is usually nuclear.
What?
Isn't it?
It's starts with a B.
Bad?
David, where are you?
No. Biohazardous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's biohazardous.
The dye they're putting into my body?
It's very minimal, but the detectors, because my dad had that with a bad heart, and he goes the next day, he's driving with his truck, and they said, you have some, we're detecting some radioactivity. And it was him. Yeah, and I've heard that several times. And same with, like, it's the same about radioactivity that's in all your smoke detectors.
So many questions. So many questions. First of all is...
We've got to wait for David to...
Number one, radioactivity. Number two, the dump can detect radioactivity.
Yeah, I thought that's what they're like looking for, illegal dumping.
Is it clean green or is it household garbage?
No, they do. Like, they check for that.
Wow.
Yep.
Another question. Can I take a refrigerator to the dump?
It's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Is it?
I think it can. There's just a metal section in the... If you go to the waste of energy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Waste of energy. I was just wondering. But anyway, that procedure's happening tomorrow, and I guess it's a long procedure. And they told me I can't drive for 12 hours after it, so it's like, oh, shit, so much for a ride tomorrow. But there's a Thursday night race, too, this week. So I will be maybe radioactive in the start line.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Paul, you're obviously, you rode both days? This week?
Yeah. Yep.
80 plus. Was that just, had you done something wrong and you needed to self-flagellate and beat yourself to death of some sort?
Well, about a month away is RC3, and it's also our Masters District Championship. So it's time to hit that course. And I mean, the wind changes even on a solo ride. It's a different ride, even the same course. So, you know, why not? The only way to get out there, well, I guess I could drive.
I was going to say that.
That's dumb. That's it. That's what mountain bike people do and gravel people do. Let's drive our vehicle, burn some fossil fuels, and ride our bikes. So, no. So, anyway, I went out, did one lap, came back. I was pretty tired. Because I try to keep it.
Hey, you boys, best.
It's true.
He's such an old curmudgeon, isn't he?
Yeah, so anyway,
how you feeling fitness wise?
You know, I've got a ways to go. I need speed. Yeah. I need, you know, hopefully I can get out Thursday. Just, you know, pick
Hold
up
on.
Some speed. Yeah. Hang on. That's and then Sunday was pretty good. A long time cycling guy that we were never teammates, but he reached out to me on Strava and said, I'm in town. He lives in Bellingham, some hole in the wall place. Just crap.
You watch your mouth.
But anyway, that's where he lives, and he doesn't get into town much. He grew up here in Spokane, and so I said, "Well, I'll meet you at Benedito's at the end of my ride at 1 o'clock." And there he was, and we had a great talk.
Cool.
Sean. Yeah. And he in '93 just did Treetop Classic, probably the last year they did it, and he just said, "I'm done," and he packed it up. And he said to me on Sunday, that was probably the dumbest thing I ever did.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He said, I missed it. I was just burned out. I didn't know what it was. So I was just like, oh, I can't do it anymore. So he goes, but every day, not every day, but he says, I think about it often and stuff. So
wow.
He listens to the show, kind of probably wax sentimental, and he reaches out to Borky every once in a while, he said. So yeah, we just told stories, old time and new time stuff, and caught up.
He can't ride anymore. He can't ride anymore.
He does. In fact, he had a heart attack riding.
Mm.
So I think right after COVID, he'd been vaccinated and everything. He doesn't think that was the thing, but he was riding his road bike, and all of a sudden he's like, jeez. And it was humid, 90 degree unusual day in that hell of a hole of a city. And
asterisk, Sam really likes Bellingham.
Yes, he does.
In footnote.
And he said he's climbing. He's like, God, he's like, his back started hurting and started getting worse and worse. Called his girlfriend at the time, now his wife, says, you got to come get me. And, you know, so it was locked down pretty much. And they got to the hospital and they said, wait, you can't go in there. You're not wearing a mask, blah, blah, blah. We need to check you out. And he goes, screw you. Goes and collapses right there.
Oh, my God.
And he had two blockages. And so they rooted him out. And I think they did a couple other checks and stuff. So he knows that heart thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two things I'm hoping for tomorrow. Number one is, and the biggest priority is, number one is that everything's fine. And number two would be, it'd be almost kind of like, oh, there's this small little problem, and suddenly my heart is pumping out so much more better. And that I actually, it's just like, oh, Pat, you've been working at like 60% for the last 10 years. And then I get on the bike now that I'm working full 100%, and I crush every single one of you bastards.
It'll never happen.
And then all of a sudden you hear this, dan, dan, dan. Oh, it's time to get up. I've been dreaming.
Shit!
Oh my God.
Sam, what the actual F were you thinking about when you did... Okay, was this... First of all, tell us what you did this weekend.
Yeah, I planned a route that was like gravel to trail that was from Spokane to Wallace, Idaho. So I think in a car it's probably an hour and a half, would you say? Maybe somewhere there, 2 hours?
A little longer than that, yeah. It's pushing 2 hours.
Yeah. So it was 120 miles there, and then we changed the route because of those pictures that I sent you of summer roads.
Yeah.
And it was 110 back. But
rode there, stayed in a hotel, rode home.
Yep. And I think I wanted an adventure that, you know, like getting into the backpacking thing, but doing it my style and my friend's style where we do it at all out speeds.
Oh, shit.
So that was the real problem. I mean, I think I, like, it's nothing heroic, but I averaged something like 230, 35 watts or something like that for like 7-8 hours.
Oh, my God.
So, like, that's a decent amount of power. And I was crustier than Paul is on a daily basis when I got into that hotel room.
That's
I was cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a crusty old man.
Oh, you get...
It's your water heater.
No, it's not.
Oh, you got a leaky pipe.
Oh, my God.
I'm starting hearing...
There's some background noise going on, and I've never heard that before.
But, yeah, anyway, so I did that, and then when we got in, I switched the route a little bit so we wouldn't have to do the summer roads, because summer roads were, like, since the rain, it probably, our wheels were dropping down a solid 2 inches into this, and...
Oh, my God.
It was...
Your photos looked like what the Unbound riders went through.
Honestly, when I saw the photos of the Unbound, I was like, God, guys, like, ride out in the grass or something. Like, find a way. Come on, it can't be that bad. And then I did this, and I have mad respect for somebody riding that long on these roads. I had to literally, because I was thinking, well, I'm going to ride in the grass. So I rode off in the shoulder in the grass, and then it picked up the grass, and it formed this... It formed this like mess in my like rear triangle of just packed clay dirt that I had to literally scoop out, get my chain to go back on. I don't know what lube I had, but whatever one it was, my friend just handed me. He's the bike rep guy.
Yeah.
That stuff stayed squeaky clean, quiet the whole day, even with all that.
Wow.
Whatever it is. Hats off to them. I'll figure it out and we can post it.
Yeah.
like might be the best lube I've ever
seen.
Holy
shit.
Yeah, it was incredible for gravel.
You looked like a shell of your former self on the first night. And then you came back, and I think I sent a text that was like, dude, how was the ride? And you went, well, it ended. And
it's
I was
over.
Like, you were so vague. And I was did some sort of a North Idaho drive-by chicken throwing element happen or something like that?
Everybody was so nice. We were on the trail, and some guy like that's clearly commuting between like Wallace and, you know, like Kellogg.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some sort of, you know, he just walks by and gives us a handshake. And I'm like, right on, man. Like, everybody was so pleasant out
You're
there.
Going that slow and you could shake your hand?
Well, I guess it was a high five.
All right.
I averaged probably a faster speed than you. We should check on Strava.
I think I was a little faster.
I bet you I was.
I was 18.7.
All right, you did beat us. Uh-huh. We were like 17.9 or 18.
There's so many questions like, what did you pack? Where did you, how did you do, you know, things like that. But
we packed very light, like just to keep it, you know, short and sweet, like super light. Just clothes to change into since we were doing the credit card route.
Yeah.
And that was really it. Like then tools and stuff that we would need to fix the bikes. But yeah, I mean, we packed minimal because
power
I didn't want
to.
We found, turns out that there is a wash station out at Silver.
No shit.
For bikes?
Yeah, for bikes.
It's well, so the mountain bike.
Yeah, for the mountain bikes. Yeah. We just stumbled across this and I'm like, oh, sweet. So that's why, like, you look at the photos at the end of it, it's like my bike looks squeaky clean. And it's like, yeah, that was not the case a few miles ago. I was carrying probably like an extra 10 pounds in mud.
Oh my God.
Ugh. Yeah, so anyway, that was my riding. That was it. It was the whole week because earlier in the week, my back was not feeling 100%. I was like, well, I'm just going to hope that it feels...
Fuck, I never hit record. I'm serious. I never hit record. At least we have the live
YouTube.
Transcript. We have the video from YouTube.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And so how long have you been doing this?
I don't know. I was looking at the time to see how long we've been going. But
31 minutes.
Holy mother of fuck.
It all works.
There, I said it.
One.
Twice.
Yeah. Twice. I think I can get the audio off of that. Can I get the audio off of that?
You can probably scrub it off.
There's no way that you can't. Anyway.
Yeah. So,
I'm special.
Good luck
amazing.
With that.
You are. Yeah. I've got my work cut out for me tonight, don't I?
Jesus! If you're just joining us now.
Yeah.
Thank God for the live stream. Let's check some headlines.
Come on! That's brutal.
I gotta figure out a way to do it.
I think you've done it before.
I feel like you've done it. This feels like a familiar
That's
situation.
A dumbass. It's a button. It's right there. And I didn't hit it.
Why don't we what color is it? Lights?
It's because Sam was late. I'm blaming it on you.
I accept that. I have broad shoulders. I can accept the way
What color is that button?
What button?
The record button.
Black.
Make it red.
Maybe
you
it's won't
got a little
it.
Red dot on it. It's got a little red dot on it.
All right.
But,
okay. Yeah. Just trying to help you out, man.
And at the opening of the show, I was busting the balls of the Cycling Legends guys for not getting proper audio, and here I am. I'm getting proper audio.
It's
I just
called karma there, buddy.
It is. It is a bitch. Let's get to the headlines. Well, at least the ones we want to talk about. Brought to you by our friends at Athletic Brewing. There's new Hoppy Hellas. Is it Hellas?
Hellas.
Out there that is absolutely delicious. Use the code PBULGER20 to grab a discount if you want at athleticbrewing.com. Let's start with the release of the recent Tour de France Unchained. Has everybody caught at least an episode?
So good.
Okay, good.
Six of them.
If you are a cycling fan,
saw all of them.
You binged it all?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. If you are a cycling fan, you likely have already caught at least one of this documentary series. If you are not a cycling fan, I'm not Joe Rogan. So, Paul, you've watched all of them.
Yep.
Sam, you watched?
Two.
Jackson?
Six.
I've watched three. So we're all at least past Thibaut Pinot.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's just funny. We're all past very emotional episode. Nothing against it, but he was.
Yeah. Oh,
bad for the guy.
My wife and I'm watching it with my wife, and she's sitting there next to me last night. She's going, well, I love this guy. What's his name? And I look at her and I say, what's your favorite kind of wine? She goes, Pinot Noir. And I just stared at her. I'm like, you can't remember his name when the second part of his name is what is in your hand while we're speaking?
And do you listen now, to any of the stuff I talk about?
Yeah, no, not just she does it. Yeah, that's what she's doing, huh? What? No, but that was where, tonight I was like going, "Are you before the show, are you going to have a glass of Tebow with me?" And she went, "What are you talking about?" And I just stared at her right for over. A couple seconds. Stared at her for a couple seconds. She went, "Oh, screw you, Pat. Shut up, Pat." That's where all the "shut up, Pat" comes from anyway. Initial thoughts on the series. Should we start with the people who've seen less or the people who've seen all? Anyway, somebody chime in.
I will say, I started it out in Wallace. We watched it when we got into the hotel room, which was an awesome way to recover.
Yeah.
But, killer insight into it. Like, it makes me more excited about bike racing because it shows you all the backstory. And I feel like I know a lot more than your average Joe when I'm just watching a race, right? You know kind of what teams are going for and the moves that they're making. But then you hear the actual director and stuff like that. And it's like, man, that is so cool live in the action.
Is it dumbed down too much?
I don't think so.
Or is that a bad thing, even if it is?
I think it has to be dumbed down. No, I think dumbed down is the wrong term. I think it just is a little bit more simplified for people that aren't, for people talking about bicycles weekly. You know what I mean? But I think it's done really well so far. The only one thing that has bothered me is there's a commentator that comes over everything and is like, "Oh, Pino has been dropped."
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only focusing on that one rider. For me, who's somebody who watched that tour, I every time I hear it, I kind of cringe a little bit and go I know that's not really what is over this.
The overdub's a little cheesy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But that's also somebody who watched the tour and knows the specific commentators at that specific moment. So it's that's the only thing that bothers me. And if that's the only thing that bothers me, that means they're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. So. Paul, you've gone through the whole shitting match.
And we were raised in a period of John Tesh. That's how we knew it. So, to get people exposed, to cycling, I think you have to kind of, dumb it down a little bit. But, knowing what I do know about cycling, I think some of it was out of context. I started looking they'd show footage and it's not the stage they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They did a lot of that, but that's okay. I mean, it doesn't have to be accurate. But if you really did probably go backstage, you'd probably be a snore fest. And I think some of it, they created conflict that wasn't there.
The Wow Van Aert. Has been commenting on the fact that they created a conflict between
him and
Vingegaard.
And I don't think
Vingegaard
it was that bad. I kind of questioned that because you know how teams run.
Mm-hmm.
They probably said the things that they did and then sampled it in. Even the, I think the stage where they crossed the bridge and mm-hmm. you remember when, what's his name? God dang it. He's in the yellow jersey.
Lampard
goes down and it's a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal. I mean, he got back on in the stage, but that's, you got to create that drama. You kind of, and it made it fun for me. Mm-hmm. And I heard on Escape Collective, they're doing on, just these shows. And one of them was that during the stage five, during the Roubaix stage, they didn't even mention who won. But I don't think that's what this is about. This is the, cycling's not this one-dimensional. Well, it looks, these riders are going down the road, and to the average person, it's nothing. Now they get to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit.
Yeah.
So I like it. I think it was very good. Actually, the Pino one is the boringest one.
Really?
All I've focused on is, what's he, that filthy goat on his lap on his kit? He's holding this goat with, and it's God, he's going to shit
on
him.
See, my wife was like, oh, see, I know. I love him even more now.
Well, that's fine. I mean, but you wear overalls when you're petting or taking care of, you got your average wellies, that type of thing.
Yeah,
but I think all in all it's good. It runs pretty, the formula's pretty close to Drive to Survive.
Is it?
Because Formula One guys on the same team sometimes don't like each other.
Yeah.
And that's that conflict. And I think a lot of people, when they watch a miniseries, they want, that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they were trying to do with Wout.
When I was in film school, that's not meant to sound snooty, but when I was there, we had a very specific assignment from in our editing class. And they gave us all the students were given the same stock footage. It was about stand-up comedians at the time, right? Like following four different documentary footage of stand-up comedians. And they asked us to piece together a story. Every single one of us came back with a completely different story. Mm-hmm. Some of us focused on one comedian. One focused on an upward rise of building success. One of us focused on the times they bombed and the fact that their career was going downwards. And all this kind of stuff. Same footage, 12 different people, 12 different stories. And so what my point of saying this is, in these this documentary series, they have to create a story. They have to engage an audience. If they're not, they're just providing a news story recap of the Tour de France, which is fine on its own. But you have to create drama in order to engage an audience, especially an audience that doesn't give a shit about your sport or might kind of care but isn't that really engaged. And so watching this, I'm watching this from a perspective of somebody who's trying to tell a story. And I'm also, excuse me, enjoying it with my wife, who obviously knows plenty about bike racing, but she's engaged in the backstories, and I'm loving the backstories. I'm loving the on-the-bike footage that they're including that we don't get to see in bike races, especially when it's live, unless it's on YouTube afterwards. And a lot of the different inside, behind-the-scenes footage is really enjoyable. Now, I think the pep talks that every director sportif gives on the bus before every race is absolute fluff and bullshit. They're just like going, okay, guys, it's a challenging stage today. I want you to ride hard and not crash in when it's time to crash. Don't crash. Okay, go get them, guys. You know, it's like, Jesus Christ, that was stupid.
Well, but I think that what they did well, they created like the scenes. I really got excited during the Roubaix, and I thought it was a great stage.
No spoilers. Although we all know who won the tour.
Yeah, yeah. but then the Roubaix, that's a number three. You haven't watched that one yet. To me, it's like...
Four, I think.
Is it four?
Yeah.
Anyway, just the chaos that goes on, like when Vindegaal, his bike...
They're swapping tells,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
You get,
oh, no, that they, is, they mix that is that. Two or three. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're mixing the... you know, the audio of the director, get him a fucking bike.
Yeah.
And they're just like, and then, because when you watch it, you could have put like Benny Hill music when you're watching. But when you're
still
in the heat
a
of the moment.
Bike on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's like total chaos.
Everybody's gone, but there's still a bike.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
It somebody, doesn't add up.
Yeah. Chris Froome in up the road or something like that. So, yeah.
So I think they did well with that, and they did well with their music mixing that in when they try to create that you know villain type of person who's always downbeat type. Yeah. You know,
is it what we expected? Is it what we hoped for?
I think so.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
What do you think it's doing for the sport? Do you think it's just bike riders watching it, or do you think there's a larger demographic paying attention?
I think that there's a larger demographic because. Like, personally, I didn't ever really follow Formula One.
Yeah.
Until, like, that, you know, Drive to Survive came out. And then I was like, oh, Formula One is cool.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. It's, I mean, great behind the scenes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they did a great job of that.
Letter grade so far?
I mean, I'd give it an A. I think they're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A.
A?
Yeah, A-.
A-. Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
So
okay.
Crusty.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, there's some things I probably would like no one else.
I've
would
seen
like,
a so. Lot in my life.
That's well, right. He's crusty, but his asshole isn't because
no,
he
no, it's
proper.
Clean. And yeah, I sit yeah. down yeah, when I
yeah,
wipe.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Exactly.
Speaking of Thibaut Pinot, he has been included in the Groupama FDJ team for the Tour de France in his final season as a professional, but there is no place for Arnaud Démare. I don't know if you guys read this today. Arnaud Démare. Manager Marc Madiot announced his first five names to the team sheet on Tuesday afternoon when he also confirmed that sprinter Démare would miss out for the second successive year. David Gaudu, fourth overall a year ago, will lead the team's GC, while Pinot will make his 10th and final tour appearance with the aim of chasing stage wins. Valentin Madouas, Kevin Genietz, and Stefan Kung.
He's done 10 tours?
10 tours, mm-hmm. Yeah. With the last three riders still to be announced. As Mario says, I should almost say it like him. Our team will be focusing on the mountains! Because every time you see him, he's just screaming his face off. He's just his head shaking in the... silver hairs flying in the wind. Michelle was asking me last night. She's like, "What is wrong with this guy?" That's Mark.
He's
Mario.
Passionate.
Yeah, he's he is
2-time Paris-Roubaix winner.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. They show footage of him riding in the Renault kit, and mm-hmm. she's like, "Oh my God, he's old." I'm like, well. Yeah, he is. Our team will be focusing on the mountains, Matteo said on a statement from Groupama FDJ on Tuesday. What are your thoughts on how long Arnaud Démare is going to stay in an FDJ kit?
I think he will probably be I'd love to see what we all think about where he'd end up, but I could see him being in a Quick-Step kit as a second fiddle to Jakobsen.
Yeah.
But this move doesn't really surprise me that much. When you have someone like Gaudu, who did get fourth, he was pretty high up there in another race. I forget which one it was. But I think was he pretty high up in Worlds this last year? I don't know. Either way.
I don't know.
Yeah. Either way, he's been showing pretty great performances. So it's hard to look past him. And when you have somebody who can maybe fight for a tour, your French team in a French tour, you kind of gotta, I think, go all out for that instead of just individual sprint wins.
Funny you should say a French team in a French tour. The French have not won since Bernardino in 1985.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are there any prospects? Let's be 100% honest here. Ben O'Connor is on a French team and has the best French. Yeah. Has the best thing for France to root for. You know, I'm not dissing French riders. I'm dissing French Grand Tour riders because you've got a guy like Julian Alaphilippe who's showing absolute signs of a resurgence, but you're not seeing anybody who could potentially buy for that yellow in Paris. Is there anybody, or is there something wrong in the water in France? They're all just drinking Pinot.
It's really only Gaudu is what it feels like right now. I mean, Bardet had his time, and I think that Bardet is an exceptional rider. I mean, he was second on stage 11 of last year, but now it's like I don't think that he can kind of stick with that upper echelon. So I think it's a lot of the country's pressure is going to start mounting on Gaudu, and I really worry that it's going to turn into a Pinot type of situation of where, oh, all of France is on you. If you don't win this, then you're a failure to your entire country.
It's just getting worse. Mm-hmm. The French are getting probably more and more desperate for somebody to win their home tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm racking my brain to think of current French riders who could pull it off, and I don't have any.
Yeah, they haven't won a Paris-Roubaix since 97.
Wow.
Frederic Guidon. That's not that shocking. I don't think that they're really going to be a dominant.
Well, you know, there's classics. Some French teams. I mean, you have, Groupama, you have Total.
Je Désert.
Je Désert. And they have a certain way, and everybody talks about the French way, and I think they're kind of, well, crusty like me. They just, you know. if Démare does go to a team, I see him like in Total Energy. Because I think he's just stuck in his French ways, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And they're going to have some budget openings here shortly.
Yeah, there's a guy disappearing.
Yeah.
So that would make sense.
Is he going to light up the tour?
Guaranteed. He has to. I think, what else does that team have?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
he's riding Tour de Suisse right now. We got fifth in the opening stage, mm-hmm. and that was good to see Peter Sagan. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been able to watch Tour de Suisse because my place of business suddenly decided to not allow VPNs.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds bummer.
Yeah. I'm quitting in 3 days.
Wait, why don't you just do it on your phone?
Because I don't, I'm in a basement. I'm in a basement theater, and not only do I not get a VPN because of wireless, but I'm in a basement theater and the cell signal sucks.
What about the Wi-Fi?
I can't, it's through their network. I can't get through Wi-Fi. The network won't let me.
He doesn't have a data signal down in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Your life sucks.
For three more days.
Well, I guess the tour you will be able to, you'll have to do NBC.
The tour.
Well,
I'm
no,
here.
You'll be. That's
the tour,
right.
I'm home. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not.
Are we having coffee then every morning here?
When you're every morning.
Every single
at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
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 Might as well. Yeah, just come down, fire up the espresso machine. Nobody's going to show up. It'll just be me sleeping on the bar. What are your thoughts on this year's tour, you guys? We see a flying Jonas Vingegaard, but we haven't seen much of Tadej since his injury. Is anybody got concern about Tadej Pogacar?
No.
No? He's going to be fine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That guy's amazing.
You guys are like, fuck it, he's good.
I would be a little bit concerned.
I would. I am.
I mean, like, it's... I don't, like, discard his physical abilities. It's more of just the fact of, like, when you're off the bike for that long, right? I mean, like, not performing racing, you lose an edge. And at the Tour, like, the Tour is such a high-end race. Like, oh my gosh. If one thing goes wrong...
Yeah.
He's going into... I mean, like, it's a long, long... time too, so like he could start off bad and then get better. It's 3 weeks, but I mean, he can bleed a lot of time in the first week.
Yeah, my thing is, I'm fine with either of them winning. I am genuinely fine with either of them. I don't see a whole lot of other contenders stepping into the screen, but I want to make sure both are firing on 100% because that makes it a much more enjoyable event.
Is Egan Bernal?
He's riding well. He had a good Dauphiné. You know, he was up there. He was near the pointy end of the peloton.
I think he was asking if he's on the list. I think he is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying like he's going to be, but it would be interesting because Richard Carapaz was the last one, like, you know, with both of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, Tadej took 2 weeks off the bike. So I think he's, I mean, and he was doing cross training within that 2 weeks that he was off. And I think that this guy is... Like I've said before, I think he's a generational talent that will bring anything and everything to this tour, and not, if he loses, go down softly like we saw last year. But I think that what we've talked about before is that I think that last year, and they talk about this in the documentary series, but they poked the bear last year, and I think that this year we're going to get a big-ass angry grizzly bear showing up to the event in the form of Tadej Pogacar. Yeah. And they're also probably going to bring a Yates brother, too. With him, which, and I think that is going to be a massive game changer. He can blow it. That's the thing. But I think he can. I think that can be a massive help this year because I saw last year what Yates provided for Garrett Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong, he got third. That's what I thought. Yep. Yeah. And so I think that he could be a good help in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in all, it's going to be exciting.
And maybe a little break might not have been a bad idea. Maybe you're flying too early too soon. So, you know.
Yeah, totally.
There we go. Let's jump to tonight's topic, brought to us in support by our friends at Scratch Labs. The season for proper hydration is upon us. As it gets warmer, think about ways to keep the machine running with multiple options from Scratch that they wonderfully provide. Great tasting, easy on the gut, and with all the right ingredients to help you rolling. I want to talk about a conversation that I recently had over dinner. About the inherent risks involved in cycling and perhaps the unfair amount of concern it puts on people close to us. We've had some unfortunate, is an understatement, events happening in our local community where we've lost a cyclist. And just this past weekend, I guess it turned out to be a pedestrian.
No, it was a cyclist.
It was a cyclist.
Yeah.
It was
a cyclist. That was released today. Okay. They were crossing from Baltimore.
Which is...
Palouse Highway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they were in the wrong.
I came across it. That's what stopped us. Mm-hmm. Like I was coming up over the dirt road, got turned around, hopped on the highway. And then, we rode up to it and the firefighter was like, you can't come through here.
Wow.
There's been a cyclist that's hit and killed. So,
So this is two in the last 3 weeks here in our community. And yes, we're supposed to be an upbeat, enjoyable, sometimes laughable show. But these are horrible incidents, and to be passionate about just about anything, cycling included, requires a bit of selfishness and focus, finances and time. And this is something that we as bike racers and bike riders understand, but what, but our significant others, and I don't want this to turn into, and sometimes I worry about when we talk about our significant others, our spouses, that, that it turns into this thought that, oh, I'm having fun, but my wife won't let me, or I want to ride more, but my wife won't let me, or my wife doesn't like this or doesn't like, that's bullshit. Love is a two-way street. And, what we do requires gigantic amounts of time, and it makes it a very selfish endeavor. And what I want to talk about tonight is the worry, the concern, the stress that sometimes get put upon our significant others. And some of us have been doing it for longer. Some of us have been doing it for shorter. Jackson, you're getting married in freaking 3.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what that, how you discuss that, how you deal with that, how you tolerate it, how you move forward together about it. So how do you and your spouse deal with the concern about the fact that you're going out onto open roads or even open trails and things like that with incredibly dangerous situations? Jackson, of course, the person who's getting married in 3.5 weeks is taking on this one first. All of you, the rest of you just kind of backed away from the mic a little bit there. Pat, well, you might want to not hit the record button. Yeah.
I mean, we have our ways. Like, we have each other's phones tracked and everything just to make sure that we know, like, if everybody's safe and everything. I mean, Wahoo sends out a link every time. I have my watch on all the time because it, if you take a fall, it'll say, do we need to call or have you had a fall or something like that? And if you don't respond in a specific amount of time, it will send out specific calls or messages to specific individuals. So like my fiance, she's one of the emergency contacts. I think, Dad, I think you are one of them. And then it will call like emergency services to all at the same time. So I think having resources like that are really helpful. I've even thought about like a radar, Sam, like you have on the back of your bike. But just having those things, I mean, familiar routes, all that type of stuff, kind of helps you just keep in check.
What an advancement that we are here now, though, that we're able to do those types of things.
Totally.
I specifically remember once being out on a ride. I think I was out near Four Mounds by myself, and I am, well, at least have been in my life, allergic to bee stings. Bee flew down my jersey, stung me in the chest. I didn't have anything to deal with it. And I was like, this is prior to cell phones. And I'm going, I'm probably going to die out here. Yeah. You know, and I just kept riding, you know, and the adrenaline and everything helped. And obviously, and I was fine after all. You know, everything was good. I could have stopped at a house or something like that, but... But now that we're able to send these dot watching types of signals to a significant other, Paul, Sam, how do you guys deal? Especially Sam, because your wife is also a cyclist.
Yeah, that was real. Like the last fall when they had the car bike accident with my brother and
absolutely.
Wife. That definitely scared her. But I think like, I have enough. It's like the technology too, right? I also have one of those helmet detectors that detects a crash and impact with my head. Wow. So that'll send out a signal to both my wife and mom. Because my wife is like, man, love her to death. She's, you're okay? Second question, bike okay? And I'm like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And like, she's concerned about that equally. but yeah, I have it going out to both of them. Because
usually
like,
when I get up from the ground, the first thing I'm like, bike okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there any brain bleeding? No, I'm good. Okay, fine.
I mean, when
win-win.
Yeah, my last big crash in Maui, it was like I checked out the bike and then I realized, oh, my arm's ripped open.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this last weekend, for instance, my mom is more of the worry wart. Like my wife is very, you know, chill about it because we have those conversations. She knows that I'm very safe. Like she rides with me enough so she sees it, whereas my mom doesn't see that. So she just hears these stories and is like, that's really concerning. So like...
Okay.
Yeah, right. I think that because Mackenzie has more, you know, like insight into it, it's not as worrisome for her. She knows how I respond on the road and how responsible I am on the road. So it's like, yeah, I mean, she trusts me out there and things can happen, but things can happen anywhere. Whereas like my mom is, you know, I called her when I needed to pick up this last weekend because we had gotten blocked in two ways. And they're like, yeah, you need to backtrack, go down, get Valley Chapel, come back up Hangman. And I'm like, I'm done. I've seen this. This was icing on the cake. I'm on 110 miles. And I just called my mom. My wife's like, good decision. Because I knew if I called her, she'd be like, you can get home. Love her.
Thanks,
my mom's like,
Pookie.
I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll bring cake.
Yeah. Yeah, she brought food.
Did she really?
Yeah, she's the best.
God.
I know.
Let's keep her. Paul, you've been at it as long as I have.
Yeah, and after you posted that, we were down at Brick West when the thunderstorm hit here.
Yeah.
And everything. But I started asking her some questions because I saw from the beginning when we first started dating, and I never even trained with a helmet. I never rode with a helmet. Unless it was races up till we started dating, and that was in 94. So, I mean, I didn't think anything of it. So she's like, hey, listen, now that we're involved, we have two kids that need to be taken. I don't need to take care of a vegetable. Fair enough. So I've been, but I think her focus was so much back then on the kids themselves. There wasn't much of time to worry about me on rides. Nowadays, there's certainly quite a bit of concern when I go out on the road. She needs to know what direction I'm going, that type of thing. And I asked her if it's because in this time period she became a nurse, is what she saw, and she goes, actually, cyclists and auto cyclists are not very common. She didn't see, but it could be her time slot stuff. Yeah. Wherever she's worked, all the shifts and stuff. She goes, auto peds, pedestrians are huge. That definitely outnumbers, but they're lower impact. But if there's an auto and cyclist, it's not good on the road.
Yeah.
She goes, I see way more mountain. I'd be more concerned about mountain bike. I see a lot of mountain bike people pulling branches out of the kneecaps and punctured Jesus lungs.
Oh, yeah.
Terry Prime, it was a rare one, but he destroyed his hip. I mean, it shattered it.
Yeah.
So those things, she goes, I'd be a little bit more perturbed because that's crippling at your age. But she goes, yeah, I think my focus now is because kids got their own lives. I have nobody. It's just you. So she is a little bit more concerned.
Are we lying when we say everything's going to be okay? When we look at somebody and say, I'm going to be fine out there on the road. Sam, you were talking Sam, you were talking about, that she trusts that you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people out on the roads that either don't know what they're doing or don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Your brother's case, very specifically. Yeah. We have, for some reason, a lot. I don't think it's a lot. I think we're getting a lot of situations where it's being presented to us. We're finding out information. We have so much more information in our society. We're hearing about assholes rolling coal and backing and stopping their car and a field of riders hitting them. We're hearing about situations all over the world where cycling versus cars incidents are happening. I don't think the percentage of those events have gone up that drastically. Am I incorrect in making this assumption?
No, I think there's more cars and more bikes. So I think the percent is the same. I think that we know a lot of people on bikes. And so I think we have recently, know people that have been affected by this. But I don't think that the percentage has gone up. So that's why it's I don't feel any more at risk now than I did back, riding in the best roads up in Bellingham.
Yeah. It's just crap town, though, isn't it?
It is terrible.
It's terrible, too.
Yeah, no sunlight.
Yeah.
It's
my God.
Overcast. Well, that's what Sean said.
Overpriced.
Sitting on the deck, and he's like, I haven't seen this much sun in probably 2 years.
This guy's missing
out.
He is not taking advantage of
it. He loves it over there. He'd never move back.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
How do you calm a worried loved one? And I'm not saying, again, please don't think that there's this frail, terrified person going, please come back to me safe. I mean, this isn't fucking Gone with the Wind or anything like that. This is my wife and I have this joking almost superstition where if I'm leaving for a ride, I'll say, okay, I'm leaving, see ya. And if she's doing something else, I won't leave until she looks me in the eye and says, okay, I love you, be safe, goodbye. She has to say those words to me every time. I am a superstitious person. But how do you do it? Does your loved one have to just kind of learn to trust in the system, or is there a magic word you can say, or is there an app, or do I just have to ride Swift?
My answer is there's not really anything that you can do, because, I mean, I think all four of us here would love to have a very special magical remedy that could kind of take away all sorts of anxiety from it, but I don't think there really is anything. Yeah. I mean, from personal experience, I've ridden in Portland, which is, I would say, a pretty metropolitan city, and from that, you kind of gain experience, you gain instinct and all that type of stuff, you get pretty comfortable, and I'm pretty comfortable with cars. I mean, The one incident that happened with me was low speed. It was definitely not something that is really worth worrying about that heavily. But just being aware, I think that as cyclists, we also kind of have this sense that we all talk about that is indescribable, of we kind of know when and where things are going to happen. Also, just like reassuring that you are as safe as you possibly can be out there. You're never going to take a risk just to take a left, you know? I think just words of affirmation, you know, to quote a love language, that's kind of what can help. But there's no rhyme or remedy to any sort of helping you feel better, and I wish there was.
If nobody has anything to top that,
well, I do not.
Yeah, Paul.
I just my wife now, commuting is just as bad as me going for a long ride. I have to text when I get to my car or wherever my destination, and let her know when I'm heading back.
Yeah.
And that eases her mind. So, I mean, that's how she's able to cope with it. And she's always said, I don't worry about your skill. You've done this too long, in my opinion. But, you know, nevertheless.
Too long.
Yeah.
Never.
But she said, it's other people I don't trust.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So we talked about open roads. We've talked about mountain bike trails. We've talked about, Jackson mentioned this sixth sense that we have where we understand that drivers are going to do something before they do. Jackson, did you have a sixth sense that some guy was going to ride his front brake into a rear derailleur of another guy and suddenly careen across the road and send you into the ditch at a closed course in a race, which is probably your worst crash this year?
No, that shit was crazy. But what I will say is that, I mean,
my point is, sorry to interrupt. No, my point is that crashes are going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We know that crashes are going to happen. You hit your head hard. That's scary shit, especially for somebody who loves you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're going to crash. Mm-hmm. Everybody in this room is going to crash. Probably everybody listening to this show, if you straddle a top tube, you're going to crash. It is a matter of time and odds. How do we deal with that? How do we deal with the fact that I can go out and play golf, drink bourbon all day with a bunch of jackass friends with goatees and who are wearing Greg Norman shirts? By the way, I hate golf. You can't tell. But I can do that all day and probably be an asshole and drive home drunk and be fine. I could play golf all my life and never come home with an entire backside shredded like I've been on a bridge in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that one?
I mean, it's, you know, it's part of the sport, but it's such a small percentage of the sport, realistically, that it isn't something that you need to think about all the time. And I think that as time goes on, as you learn the sport a little bit more, crashes lessen even more. Just because you've learned the situations, you know kind of how to react to certain things. I mean, I know P12 race is pretty dangerous, all that type of stuff. Yeah. But you become accustomed to that as time goes on. And
Remco Evenepoel went off a bridge.
Also, I feel like at the higher speeds and everything, like I haven't had as many crashes that were really bad in a 1-2 race as I did in like the 3-4.
You have not.
No, because really? It's like we're railing a corner so hard that you slide.
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
And that's pretty minimal.
It's pretty minimal. You're going to lose a lot of skin. But, like, you're not going to just break every bone in your body. Whereas, yeah. like, a lot of the other ones are you're, like, plowing into the back of, you know, a group and shattering arms. I feel like, I would say for crashes, like, people ask me this question all the time, right? I'm just talking about, like,
so that's the advice they ask you to go back to the question at the top of the show. It's like, going, oh, you're a cyclist. How often do you shatter arms?
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, aren't you worried about cars and crashing and stuff? And I'm like, honestly, because of my, like, previous racing and everything, I know how to crash. So, like, crashing isn't scary to me. You know, it's like, I know my instinct is tuck and roll.
We used to have to, when I was at the Olympic Training Center, we had to do tumbling classes for that.
Yep.
To try and teach that skill.
Yeah, we were taught that stuff too. And it was one of those things like that is so valuable to know how to roll, to tuck your body to protect yourself that, like, I mean, I've been in bad crashes and come out okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that, good God, do not, like, go out and crash because you want to practice this. Yeah. But, like, there's probably, you know, like, YouTube videos out there that are, like, how, like, teaching you in your mind. And, I mean, something that my dad always taught me was, like, thinking what if, you know, so you will not find me in a pack in a situation where I don't have a what if of getting out.
Really?
Yep. Like, when I'm, when you see me moving around, yeah, when you see me moving around the pack, I always have an out.
Do you?
Yep.
I probably do too. I just don't know if I think about it, if I consciously think about it anymore.
Always just like to think in the back of your mind. I mean, it's everything in life. Like, just what if? What if this car veered in front of me? What if these people all of a sudden, like, had to slam on the brakes? What if this cyclist crossed wheels and went woof?
See, now, I guess my question for the panel would be, because my what ifs, I would say, are, and I know that my fiance's at work, so she won't hear me say this, but I know that my what ifs are probably riskier. Are just a little bit riskier because I do see gaps open up in what if situations, and I know that I can shoot those gaps, but it's not a guarantee every single time. Would you say as age has progressed, your what ifs are a little bit less risky than the ones 100%. That I had at
24? Well,
oh my God, you've just defined aging.
Because I
the
feel,
aging process.
Because I feel like at my age right now, I have that instinct of I'm gonna shoot that gap so I can.
You're made of rubber
win.
Still.
Yeah.
This last crash proved that.
And I, do you see me right now? Yeah. I'm willing to go back and do it again. Like,
right.
Yeah.
You're made of rubber still. Wait, like eight
Jackson,
more years.
Your bike's not made of rubber.
It's not. But I have a very very wonderful friend that is very very willing to help me.
Do I have an awe?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do it for you.
May I mention groomsmen as well?
Yes. Yes.
But you're right. There is, I mean, as you get older and stuff, in fact, that chat earlier I said with Sean, he said that part of it when he tried to race, he's like, these idiots are taking chances that I'm not willing to take.
Yeah.
And it's not about winning at that point for me. It's having fun. And I know if I'm gambling to, you know, shoot a gap, it's not so much me I'm worried about, it's taking other people out. You know, because at 60 years old, there's no reason for me to think that I'm going to win, you know, these APAC races. That's it's ridiculous.
I think you can, Paul.
I don't think so.
Game on.
But nevertheless, the thing is
I'll take out
things
the whole
are a little
field.
More important.
God, just dive across the side of the field.
Yeah. Should have done it once.
When you go ahead.
Like that, I'm willing to do it again.
Yeah. Like that Bahrain victorious guy.
Yeah. Earlier in the classics, he's just like, hey, I can shoot this. Oh, shit. That's how old puddle. Yeah.
And he goes flying across.
Yeah. Yep.
That's how you do it.
I'll do that for you.
That's nice. But, you know, the thing is, it's not, it's...
Just like
my wife said, you know, when we had this discussion, we were talking about, she goes, I don't see very many, I know there's a lot of bike crashes and stuff that people slide grease out, but road riding, there's a lot of, like, skin abrasions.
Yeah.
Broken collarbone, you'll see them come in.
Yeah.
That's about it, and broken wrist. Mm-hmm. But she goes, the big ones are more mountain bike because they are really messed up because there's so many immovable objects, trees, branches, and, you know, that type of thing, so... And they're doing crazier things. You know, they're you know, jumping, that type of stuff. So I think though, when you get older, to reiterate, it's like, no, I wish I could, but don't bounce like I used to.
I could, Sorry, let me clarify too. When I say shoot risky gaps, it's not necessarily risky as in the form of I could take out the whole field here. Like they're all very responsible racing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's my reaction time slower. So I know what you're talking about. You see a gap, you shoot it, but now you're going to have to respond if somebody moves it over, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of alters things. I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah.
Because, in all honesty, my reaction time I know is slower. And it's like, Jesus, I would have plowed right into him. I've seen it. So I don't take those chances. Mm-hmm. So,
but just wanted to be sure.
I have to go to work on Friday.
That's the thing.
Well,
I
had to, too. But
yeah.
Still took that dumbass risk.
Yeah. You don't this week.
Nope.
I did find out that it was interesting going for that, and I'm going to use the G word. It was interesting going for that gravel ride with Jackson this weekend because, and I'm shifting all over the place. I did. Back to road safety. One would think, in terms of dealing with stereotypes, that a person comes along on a gravel ride in a large diesel-fueled vehicle that they're going to flip you off. This is where I live. This is my back road. What the hell are you doing out here? Every single driver waved to us.
Yeah, they
slowed down. Now, I'm not saying that always happens because sometimes it happens where they just fly by you and kick up dust into your face, roll coal, and flip you off. But in this case, every single person at least lifted a finger up the steering wheel to do a little bit of a wave, and they got out of the way. You're exactly right. I don't know why it took me by surprise.
Me too.
Do we live in a world that we're just expecting the worst out of people?
Have we
shifted this direction?
I expect that out of people when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, now when I'm out riding gravel roads, it's like, that's what, like, man, I love it. Like, that's why I planned our route to go out gravel roads.
Yeah.
Because of that. And then the one little bit of time that we were, like, on the highway, we'd have people, like, rolling coal or coming close, and it's like...
Yeah.
Those are urban cowboys. Roads. The real ones. Yeah. You guys are experiencing being raised in a small town. Rural people are friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, you could knock on the door and say, hey, I just need do you have something I can eat? Sure, sit down. We'll do
that. Yeah, here's the fridge.
Here's some fresh cow's milk, and I've got some beef for you, son. Yeah.
I got a pie cooling in the window.
Yeah.
But we used to do that. Like, every time you're driving on a gravel road, you pass somebody, you do a wave.
You wave.
Yeah, you always wave. And that's just hospitality. The people that you're looking at, these guys... that, like I said, urban cowboys, they just want to be a part of that, and they, you know, they lift their truck and they drive a big diesel, and they you know, dual exhaust or stack them, you know, that type of thing.
Truck's never done a day of work.
Yeah, and you know, there's just going to be those people that are that way. But as a general rule, when you ride out, even in the country roads, like when we do the Troika Loop, they're friendly people. I mean, you rarely get anybody that's going to buzz you.
And I always find it's easier to be the first person to be a nice person. You know, some people are going to be assholes, and they're just going to be angry no matter what. But I've also found that just, you know, when for example, we have a tendency when there's two or three of us or four of us even, if a car's coming behind us, we go a single file. Yes, it's a longer vehicle to pass for them, but it's less space. And so when the road's kind of windy and we go single file, I would, if I'm usually, no matter where I am, if I see the road ahead and I see it's clear, I'll wave the car by. Mm-hmm. And when the car starts to come by, I will give a second wave saying thank you for, you know, for passing us in a human fashion. And I find that works so well with most drivers. 95% of the time, the driver waves back and says, thank you for waving me by, letting me know when the road is clear.
Yeah, and I will say, with all of the conversation that we've had on this, it's very good to bring up the topic, I think. But I also think it's very good to remember that it's not all bad out there.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of really great.
There's a lot of really great people. I will say 90 to 85% of the people that we encounter within vehicles give you ample to over ample amount of room on the road. And I know that there are a very large percentage of people out there that are really nice, but it's always just important like the great message that we've been sending out to just stay aware. Understand that if you need to take a turn, let the car go by. Don't assume that they're going to stop for you, because there is a 50-50 chance they might not.
Yeah.
So just be aware, be careful. We all got to make it home.
We can agree that maybe 25% of the drivers might be assholes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can agree that 25% of cyclists might be assholes.
Mm-hmm. For the rest of us, might be a little higher.
There are four. There are four people in this room.
And there is one.
One of
asshole.
Us is an asshole. You pointed at me.
Well,
we were all.
I thought it was like everybody is pointing at me.
I thought it was like it's a game where we were going to try and figure out who it was. But no, I'll take it. I am. I am. Jackson,
your mom is a whore.
Oh, it all comes back around.
Jackson's inner asshole's coming out. I've seen it in races a little bit.
Yeah, it's
where
fun.
It's like you're touching people on the butt, which just sounds wrong. Sounds yes. way wrong. But you're touching people, and you and somebody says consensual, and some people are saying stuff to you, and I hear just kind of words that you're saying back, and I'm like going, "That's my boy.
That's my boy.
He's got a little bit of an inner asshole." Yeah.
Then and I'm so excited to be back racing again this Thursday after crashing and everything. It's just going to be good to go fast, not worry about the result, even though I'm going to still worry about the result.
Yeah.
But it's going to be fun.
Just look at everybody like you're all twitchy and nervous, though, because then they'll just stay away from you. You just be like, I don't know, I'm scared, I'm going to be panicking. And then people will just be like, get away from Jackson, man. He's freaking lost it.
Yeah.
And then you launch and you're away solo.
Yeah. If you foam at the mouth, nobody's going to talk.
Yeah.
Take some shampoo right before the race.
Yeah.
There you go. He's got rabies.
This is a man. I'll tell you what.
And then
it really gave me rabies.
Cut the sleeves off your jersey and don't wear socks.
Don't put on deodorant for the whole day.
Oh, that's a triathlon.
There
joke.
You go.
Yep.
God. That'll wear keep him alive. The whole day.
Or wipe your butt standing up.
Yeah.
That'll start stinking too.
Yeah. That is messed up. How'd my luggage work, by the way?
It was great.
Did
that's dirty now. One of them.
You brought back a dirty bag.
I tried to wipe it clean. It's kind of like my butt.
You were standing up.
I was standing up.
Yeah.
You beat me to the joke.
Sit down and clean my bags.
Yep.
You asshole. You brought back a dirty bag.
That's not
You're
bad.
The first person to use that bag. I bought that shit a year ago.
Oh, that's not that bad. You would have done that anyways.
But I would have done it. It would have been mine. Kind of like scratching somebody else's bike.
When would you have done it, though?
I doubt we'll ever.
Hopefully, I bet you'll do something. More.
It's a good bag.
It is a great bag.
Yeah,
man.
It's a good bag.
Also, it stores a ton because it like folds down to just like there if you really want it.
Yeah. If you did credit card thing, what the hell did you put in that thing?
Just clothes.
Condoms.
Did you use every piece of clothes that was in there?
Yes. Yeah, I used everything that was in that bag. Yeah, and then packed enough like nutrition for the next day.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty small. I packed that thing down pretty light. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do have to say that.
It was, I think you might enjoy what we did.
No.
Because
I
it
can
is.
Guarantee
I
you.
Think Paul would love gravel. Jackson and I talked about it this weekend. You are living a closed off life. I think you would love it. And I know
there's
you would love
version that you would like.
You would, It doesn't have to be big old fat tires.
Mind you, I grew up on nothing but gravel roads.
That's what we're saying.
Nothing, it's not like that's...
Yeah, but you were on 22s or 19s.
Yeah.
You can even do
miserable.
With 100 PSI.
Like, yes. Like when
that's
I'm
how
riding,
I like it.
I have 35s, I think, on mine with like probably 45 pounds of pressure or something like that. It honestly makes the gravel road like a road with no traffic, rolling
what's
hills.
What's exciting about that? Oh. You have to be on the razor's edge.
You can do that.
Man, put 10 pounds on your back seat and rail a corner.
You guys.
It'll pucker you up real quick.
I came to a horrible conclusion again this weekend about how big of an idiot I am. I left the house the night before our gravel ride. I keep saying that freaking word.
Well, it is what it is.
I changed tires and I did all the sealant and all that kind of stuff and everything was good to go. And I didn't realize that overnight it had leaked a little. And I just kind of grabbed my bike and went out the door and my tire pressure was pretty low. When I got to the coffee shop where Jackson and I rode, it was kind of spongy. And so I had my tiny little hand pump and I just, it took me about 400 pumps to get it up.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Oh. So, I haven't even had the pills.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was still pretty soft.
Oh my God.
Jesus H. Christ.
I'm gonna go with it.
Yeah.
And then so I decided to go for it anyway. No, there's the there. I realized how nice it is to ride with lower pressure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
By accident.
By accident. You wouldn't take advice.
Usually,
you had to experience it.
But I just, there's something in my brain that is going like, dude, no. You have to, at the very least, you have to put your gravel tires up to at least 60 pounds. 60,
what?
70 pounds. Yeah.
I've got 30.
I've been running 60 to 70, and I think that's too low. And this weekend, I probably went out of the door at 30. And then I probably pumped it back up to 40 to 45. And my shoulders feel wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've got a suggestion. If everybody rides 650 Bs with 48s, it's even cushier.
Yeah.
That's what my
but
commuter
you're
bike
slow
is.
As shit, though.
48s?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
slow, though, right?
I don't.
Didn't
yeah.
feel slow. Felt pretty
good. I think for around here, like, we have such nice, you know, kitty litter gravel that,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I think we could get away with
35s.
25s. We ride.
35s. 25s.
35s.
45s.
48s.
Oh, my God.
We're going to get Paul on. That would actually be a brilliant video segment.
Yeah, we'll do
it's
it.
It's just to have you ride a gravel bike. Balls out as fast as you can go and talk about the
I'd
difference.
Rather do that on a road bike.
But
and I've done it many
saying.
Times.
We do it side by side. Mm-hmm. You ride the same course
yeah.
on different bikes and see what you can do.
Ride yeah. it on my bike, which is probably the closest to a mountain bike. That you
no,
can get
gra- we have him go on a here. Full out gravel bike and his road bike two different times and see what the experience is like. And maybe he'll come out of there going, wow, that was kind of
I'm
enjoyable.
Not saying it, it
makes
that
me
want to
buy a handlebar bag.
No.
Take it easy. Take it easy.
Terry Prime proved that the Ellensburg, that Grand Fondo,
yeah.
the dirt one, the brutal. Fastest times are 28C tires, everybody's the fastest time and on a road bike. Just disc brakes so they can get that width.
I rode that whole thing. Bullshit.
Well, he has, you know, you can see the people who won. In Ellensburg, yes. His fastest
time. Or the
time.
Ephrata.
Ephrata.
Yeah.
Ephrata.
Ephrata.
Oh, Jesus.
So I can't remember which one. It was one that you did.
It was Ephrata. Ephrata. Yeah. I've done them both. I've done
He says it's a road bike course.
Yeah, it is.
So
we got a quick tip?
Yes.
Okay, quick tip with Bike Fit Sam, brought to us by our friends at Ambassador Cycling, ambassadorcycling.com. Get fit to get fit. You can have that.
I'll take it.
Okay.
I'll take that.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I would say that in this last week, I had 15 bike fits, and of those 15, Holy. Probably 4 or 5 of them had their cleats set up slightly different. And they came in with like a different array of issues, right? Because it can present differently. But that's just always where I first check. Like, flip their cleats over and look. Do that at home. Like, just look and see that your cleats are symmetrical on both sides. Unless you've had a bike fit and they've, like, purposely put that way.
Wow.
But, like,
yeah,
that's pretty rare. Like, most of the time you should be symmetrical with that. And so,
and
yeah.
in terms of doing that, is there a method? Or is it just flip your shoes sole to sole and make sure they're both pointing in the same direction? Is it an eyeball thing?
Yeah,
or
good
is
question. I would say, like, because a lot of them have markers on it, and so yeah. that's the easiest case. Okay. Otherwise, like, a lot of them have these, like, slits in the bottom of the shoe for, like, ventilation, and you can look at those and compare that.
Okay.
But, like, best case scenario is just follow the numbers on the bottom. I mean, it can be, like, so blatantly obvious that you have, like, one, you know, shoe or one pedal is slightly forward. Like, the cleat position is 2 millimeters forward.
Yeah, yeah.
And it throws off everything. If you're doing 80 revolutions a minute for an hour, that's huge.
This just popped into my head.
Your cleats are wrong?
No. They might be. They might be. How often... I mean, well, actually, with cleats, and people probably think with the natural float that they're going to be okay having them slightly off,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably not a good idea.
No, yeah, unless like my cleats are slightly rotated just differently. 4.5 is the same, but they're slightly rotated differently because my left foot pops out a little bit more. So that is, okay. but that should be on purpose. And biggest thing, when you're going to replace your cleats, draw around them with a Sharpie.
Yeah,
because. Everybody does it. They take it off and they're like,
oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah. In your opinion, how often should cyclists change shoes? Because I was thinking, the first thing that popped into my head when you were thinking about the, what if the numbers wore off?
Mm-hmm.
How often should you change shoes?
I think I usually get like 4 years out of my shoes. Huh. Yeah.
Damn it. I still
I wait until I have to use duct tape to keep it together.
To keep the shoe together. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like 4 years, and you can replace some arch supports in there in that time. But 4 years is usually like when I start to notice that they like flex a little bit more, or, you know, the sides are wearing down a bit. And that's usually when I start
to replace
them.
It's just a structural integrity kind of the sides. Usually I would assume the sole is going to last.
The sole will last a long time, but you will notice a little bit more flex in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. And I want the new Giro shoes. I just want an excuse.
Need them.
I want an excuse to
How
buy those
years?
Things.
Three years.
Yeah, I think 3 years is when you should replace them.
Yeah, yeah, it makes me think about, I got to go home and make sure mine are okay. I haven't checked them since I took a
Wipe them off with a fucking brand new diaper, you know, like a
magic eraser.
Cloth.
So
just every night I would just be like, I would put them on a lit shelf in the corner of my room, like those, just like and the light comes up from underneath them. Your shoes are gorgeous.
They are gorgeous, and they do have a shelf. But I was concussed, so I think that's an excuse that I can use.
They're beautiful shoes. Zero. Yeah. Final question of the show, everybody. If any cycling story could be told on film, this is coming off of our experience of the documentary, but a narrative story like the, you know, Davis Finney, action hero or something like that. You know, if there could be a film story of a cyclist or a cycling event that you would want to see made, what would it be? I will go first just to give you an example. For example, I would like to see the life of and times of Major Taylor presented in a film, just a biopic of Major Taylor. I think it'd be a great story because he died quite tragically, you know, kind of broken alone. But what a personality and what a story I think that would be. Anybody got one? Sam?
Yeah, the one that pops into my head, everybody's going to give me a hard time with this, but Unbound. And I'm going to say that because, like, I watched some videos of Unbound this last weekend, and I'm going to forget her name, but she's a specialized sponsored rider, and she had a Formula One pit stop. It was so cool to see. She rolls in.
She went documentary style on this.
I want documentary, I want, like, to see, like, what insight are they doing for, like, I mean, all the way down to, like, tires are fascinating for, you know, the different scenarios, gearing that they're running. Like, Lachlan Morton did a piece on his bike. But, I think that it would be really interesting to see, like, the backside of how an athlete prepares for this. You know, the gear that they choose, how they have their pit stop set up, because it's all of that.
Yeah.
And, like, that, the video, I could send it to you guys after this, is just mind-bending how fast she rolls in, throws the bike, takes off her shoes, they give her new shoes, give her a new pack, she empties her shirt of these, you know, like, wrappers.
Gel wrappers,
and then just, boom, 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 and just off she goes. Yeah. I mean, it was insane. It was so cool.
Like 24 hours of Le Mans.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got a story you'd like to see made into film?
I think it would be kind of cool to follow any particular kid in Belgium going through, you know, it would take a series of year clump trying to make it into the pros because it's,
oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, from day one, and the tradition is, as a junior, you have like a local bar will actually support and raise money so you can race. And that is your bar. And, you know, your name. Wow. And they have pictures. So they do all this and just have him, you know, his training and what it takes, whether it's successful or not. But when Dismount Dave and I went in 2018 and saw Flanders, the junior races, I mean, like the young little kids were going up doing part of that race. And I'm thinking, This is a course for Flanders. It'd be like playing in the Super Bowl. They're in the stadium that no other sport allows this. And I thought that would be so cool to just watch some kid for like 5 years.
The dreams.
Yeah, the dreams of 14, whether it comes crashing down or not. But because it's so embedded in that culture.
Do you remember Hoop Dreams, which was a gigantic success as a documentary film, probably 15, 20 years ago at least. What a great concept that would be, yeah. but based upon following three or four or five Belgian, you know, or kids, or trying, European to kids trying to make it through that. That'd be a really good. So we got two documentaries. I chose a narrative. I want an actor, to obviously, to play Major Taylor. Jackson, what's your choice?
I'd probably pick a documentary as well, but I would really be interested to see, like, the life of what it was like to live inside of Taylor Finney's mind.
No. That'd be just crazy.
But that's the thing.
It's random.
He's such an interesting dude. Yeah.
That's why I think it'd be really cool, because he's such a creative mind.
Yeah.
That's the edibles.
Well, yeah. I think he's such a creative mind, though, because he's not just an athlete. He's got some sort of artistic, like, backing to it, and I think that's really cool, because he had so much pressure put on top of him, just because, you know, you enter a race with the last name of Finney, you've got to be doing damn well. And I mean, the Livestrong program put a lot of money behind that kid, and when he grew up into a guy, he realized that, I don't want to do this anymore. I love painting and I love making music, and I think that it's so interesting to see how the sport can affect a human being, to like push them away from it almost into something else. I mean, he's not gone from bikes. His girlfriend is Cassian Iwiadoma.
Yeah.
And so he's still in that world, but he's like made something on top of it, which I think is really interesting.
I think we have not seen the end of Taylor Finney in this sport, because he's such a charismatic character, and he has so many quirky ways to present himself. And I don't mean that as a condescending term when I say quirky. He finds different venues and avenues in which to present himself, and that's what made him intriguing as a bike racer. And I think that's what going to make him. He's going to find a niche, probably within the sport, that he creates something, jersey design, who knows what it could be. But, you know, talk about a tough parental upbringing, you know, Davis and Connie, you know.
Think with him, though, his crash at Nationals was
that was the end.
Big.
Yeah, that was and the I beginning think that's where you started seeing where, like, he couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So all his life it was something. He tried other sports, too.
He was a soccer player, big soccer player.
But now he went in. It was so easy for him. I mean, he was world champion on track. But when you have something that you slow down, it's like, wow, that's painful, and the constant surgeries, is it worth it? And he's spending time on a side that he never tapped into before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that really changed his perspective on cycling. So, and not in a bad way, not at all.
So what you're saying is we should all leave the sport and find a creative side.
I have none.
Yeah, I think all of us.
I've left the sport and found my creative side.
You have this.
This is my creative side. Shit.
Yeah, you messed up.
I think we all have that creative side.
At least you sit down when you wipe.
There we go.
That brings it all around. Everybody, we're gonna call the show right there. By the way, stay tuned. Yesterday I sat down with Anna Mariah Rook, digital editor of Cycling Weekly, but also recently second place at the Gravel Unbound
XL.
350 miles, placed second. And she and I had a good talk yesterday, and that podcast is going to come out on Friday. This podcast, who knows when it's going to freaking come out, because I've got to find out a way to get the first 30 minutes because I did not hit record early enough. So if you're hearing this show and it's fragmented, my fault.
Go to YouTube.
To YouTube, exactly. Just watch
it
there.
It's all there right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So there we go. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Sam, you're mellow tonight, and I'm worried about you.
I'm just, you know, recovering from 230 miles on a weekend.
You didn't go upstairs.
This is a bad thing.
My eyes were 1,000 miles back in my head. Now they're just like 100.
You didn't go upstairs to get to Skittles. Steal any of my candy.
I got Skittles,
and now I've got Albanese gummy bears up there, too, on that shelf. So I'm just saying, I got a candy shelf. I'm like a creepy grandma.
You got quiet candy for me because of just me popping Skittles last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like,
pretty
this one's
soon
gonna be quiet.
I'm gonna have a white van in the yard with a dental chair and a clown costume.
Interesting visual.
Oh my god!
Thanks, everybody. We will catch you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.